Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we coming from our basement to your headphones. Barely even know who we are, but changing the unknown. In a while, topping the charts.
Thank you for downloading the podcast, Theanos. Now here are your hosts, Jordan Hall and Eric Wayne.
Welcome into another episode of the Podcastianos. I am Jordan Hall, and for the second straight week, Eric Wayne is off doing who knows what, who knows where. But no fear, you're actually in significantly better hands, and you can tell him I said that, than normal, as I'm joined by Max Boltman of The Athletic. Max, thanks so much for hanging out with me tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and there is no way I'll be able to fill Eric's shoes.
They're very oddly shaped shoes that very few people really know how to fill. I will give you that. So how long?
Yeah,
have you,
absolutely.
How long have you been with The Athletic now?
I've been writing for them since August. I think the first week of August was when I started freelancing, and then I went full time. Just that very beginning of November. So
gotcha.
We're coming up on a year, depending on your definition. But either way, we're in the ballpark.
Are you expecting some sort of like anniversary cake? Is that how they? I mean, the funds seem to be unlimited at The Athletic. I'd expect quite a present.
No, I think I owe them a cake for bringing me on, and I think I have to bake Craig something. That's the rule.
Oh, okay. Man, if that's the rule, we should start bringing in sub podcasters if they have to bring in baked goods.
exactly. Yeah.
So, are you enjoying the company of the other Detroit writers? Like, you guys have quite a collection there.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. No, it's an unbelievable staff, and that's like one of the coolest things is, obviously, they give us a pretty rare amount of freedom and flexibility to go and do the kind of stories that we want to do, and they're the kind of stories that I think a lot of journalists would love to do, given that freedom, that space. So that, you know, the baseline is fantastic, but when you consider kind of the community and the friendships that I have now, that, you know, just from this core of The Athletic, you know, be able to have beers with Brendan Quinn or Katie Strang, or, you know, James Edwards get together very often. Our new college football writers, Colton Pouncey and Cody Stavenhagen, are great guys. We went out in Ann Arbor a couple of weeks ago, and obviously Craig and Chris Burke are also, you know, just really fun guys to sit and hang out with. So, you know, it's this really great community. Our editor, Allison Tatsunika, is really fun. I don't have a bad word to say about anybody.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We get along real well.
I kind of imagine, like, everyone that writes within a specific organization, like, being borderline friends. And obviously that's not true in just about every scenario. But it is kind of cool to hear that you guys actually do all like each other.
Yeah, we get together fairly often, actually, and we have our staff meeting. So we don't have an office, right? So the internet is our office. So when we have meetings, we have to like rent out space in like this like Ann Arbor community center or whatever. And then afterwards, every time we go out for beers, like there's like this place in Ann Arbor, it's like beer and Asian fusion food or something. So we'll have like IPAs and kimchi all together.
Sounds like
hanging
the dream.
Out. So, yeah, absolutely. And I should say our intern, Jordan, who your listeners will probably be more familiar with because he does a lot of Tiger stuff, is awesome. And I love hanging out with him, too. I don't know how we do it. We seem to get a very compatible group.
And everyone can find you on Twitter at @M_Boltman. And I understand that there's a free T-shirt deal going on right now. Is that still happening?
Probably. at any given time, there's a good chance there's a free t-shirt deal going on.
If there's ever a time to get in with The Athletic, it would be when you could get yourself a free shirt. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I want one of those. I don't have one of those, like, pennants. Did you see those? There was, like, one of those promotions going around at one point. I didn't even get one. I really want one of those.
Man, I feel like the base compensation should be all of the promotional products. I'm assuming that, like,
I should just
Nick
be paid
got his
pennant.
Own. Yeah. Or paid in gum, either way.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it. We open the show every week with kind of a silly question to get the juices flowing. So the leadoff question this week is, what is your favorite baseball term or cliche that you use regularly in, like, everyday parlance, even in non-sports context? Do you have any of those?
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, a few. Like, I mean, I feel like the one I find myself telling other people is, like, you know, you can't bet 1,000 or whatever. But
yeah,
which is even kind of like a weak one. But I feel like there's just so many. Like, I feel like, you know, in covering sports, you know, there's no way that I can actually relate to these athletes in so many areas, and just the amount of ways I find to use their jobs to discuss things in my day-to-day life is kind of laughable.
it's the great equalizer. We're all we can all speak the same lingo. Yeah.
What's yours? Do you have one?
I use the term replacement level, speaking about anything all the time. That's a big one for me. I refer to myself frequently as below replacement level. And the other one is the 20 to 80 scale. I mean, I feel like anyone who likes baseball can't really measure anything not on a 20 to 80 scouting scale.
I actually caught myself, like, describing somebody as having, like, plus skills in, like, a non-baseball zone the other day. So that fits.
I feel like if you're talking to a person who doesn't understand what that means, maybe the friendship should just end there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you go to, like, Pancheros, the burrito shop, and you're like, yeah, it's, you know, plus tortillas, but it's a five chicken, you know, let's be honest.
If you want to get in touch with the show on Twitter, you can. I am at JordanHall23. Eric is at Comeric Eric, and the show is at Podcastianos. And Max, of course, is at M_Boltman. On Instagram, I am at Jordinho4. And we'd love it if you would take the time to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, whatever other platform you're listening to the show on. And I always say, if you are going to leave us a review, take a screenshot of it and tweet it to us, and we'll read it. And you guys leave us reviews and then never actually follow through on that. But somebody actually did. We have a review. It's from @KipKip_Hooray. Their review says, "Ode to the Utility Man," and it's a 5-star review. They say this is speaking of the show. They say everything I'm thinking with less swearing. I only wish they were around during the Cleet Thomas and Adam Everett days. To be fair, I kind of wish that too, because we actually won during some of those days. Much less so now.
Well, I should say, I'm not trying to suck up here. There was a road trip I took. Well, I mean, when I was moving for an internship in college, and I listened to like 2 or 3 of your guys' episodes back to back. We're talking, this would be 2015, I want to say. I was in the car for like 20 hours straight. So I'm a long time, maybe I don't listen to every episode, but I'm a long time listener here.
Man, 3 straight of us. I can hardly imagine even hearing my own voice for that much. I'm surprised that gave you the will to keep going.
Well, I remember there was one episode and they were going to Anaheim or something, because you guys did like kind of your thing about how abysmal they had been. This was when they were just like couldn't win a game in Anaheim to save their life. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, I mean that's pretty much last 10 years straight. Yeah,
right. Yeah. So there was one. It must have been around the trade deadline or something, because I just remember listening to like 3 back to back to back. So I can vouch for the show. It's the best name in podcasting, I would argue.
Yeah, the name is all Eric. As if anyone had any questions about that.
Any doubt.
Yeah, that is so classically Eric, and definitely appreciate that one.
I'm Blaine Hardy, and you're listening to the Podcastianos.
So, Max, as we sit here on July 22nd, the non-waiver trade deadline is just over a week away. So deals have already been made, but it seems like the Tigers are kind of sitting a little quietly right now. As far as you can tell, is there anything in the works at the moment?
No, I don't have anything for you on that front. But I will say that the way Mike Fiers pitched against the Red Sox this weekend, it wouldn't surprise me if that really got the wheels turning there, just because when you're talking about starting pitching, which is one of the areas that the Tigers theoretically should have a surplus to deal from, you're dealing with a thing where there's a limited number of starts a guy can make. And so you want to deal with as many of those starts left on the table. Fires isn't quite a true rental. He's got another year of arbitration. But when you have a team that's in a race and you're going to say, well, how many games can he realistically give me? I would expect that those talks are going to heat up, especially on Fires after that last start, just because teams are going to want to get as many starts out of the guys they're acquiring as possible.
Now, with Fires having the extra year, does that actually play in our favor? Because you think of him as, like you say, as a rental, but they would, in theory, be stuck with him going into the following season. Does that actually help us or hurt us, do you think?
No, I mean, I don't know if you're ever really stuck with a guy, though, right? Like, if you don't want him, you just don't take him.
Yeah,
like,
that's very true.
You know, it's an arbitration contract. It's not a contract that I think is going to be – it's not going to be an albatross or anything like that to somebody who takes it. And maybe if a team figures, you know, like they've got a guy who's injured or they've got a prospect who they want to come up and take that spot, I don't think he's a guy that's that hard to deal in the offseason either, you know?
So yeah, it's a very manageable contract.
Exactly, 100%.
And I feel like he has spent his career, he made his living off being a wildly streaky pitcher. Like, we know that. Do opposing general managers kind of not be aware of that, or are they just willing to roll the dice and, you know, it's not going to take a ton to get him? Is that kind of the case? They're just willing to take a low risk gamble here?
I would assume so. I mean, ultimately, I assume that they've got all kinds of factors that weigh into a decision. You'd think in 2018, teams are going to have input from their analytics department. They're going to have input from their scouts. You know, there's lots of things that are going to come into play there. And ultimately, it's like you said, if the risk is low, you'll take the chance. I mean, if you watch him pitch and you're liking the way that he's approaching something, you think it feels really good right now. Particularly if you're a team that's going to be in a tight playoff hunt and not just loading up for the postseason. So that's a distinction that you're going to see in the NL versus the AL races, right? Like the AL team, playoff teams already know who they are, right? They're loading up to face each other in the playoffs in a situation where you might only have four starting pitchers, or in some cases three if you really want to get like wild, like Cleveland could do that, you know?
Yeah.
In the NL, you got teams that are going to go tooth and nail down to the wire. They need every game they can get. Like, the Indians don't really have to win more games in the regular season at this point if they don't want to, right?
Yeah.
Not that they'd be a team training for starting pitching anyway. But in the NL, I think it's the kind of thing where, you know, when you have a streaky pitcher, if he's on the hot streak right now, we'll, you know, ride him and see if you can get three more out of him. And maybe those three games in August or in late July are the deciding factor.
And you'd assume he'd have more value going to the NL because he has fairly extensive history there. I mean, he clearly will know the league a little bit more, although he has been gone for a while, you know, to the Astros and now to us. But so obviously Fulmer going on the DL today, that's from a fan's perspective, that's a good thing because that pretty much shuts down any whispers of him moving. Was there any actual traction on that front before the kibosh was put on that?
I don't have like a scoop for you there, but my expectation would be that, you know, he was not pitching in a way that was gonna bring a return that might have been what it would have been this off season, or last off season, I should say, you know, just because of the way that he was going. I mean, something that the Tigers were gonna bite on with him, I don't think that kind of offer was out there. But again, that's relatively uninformed speculation here, so.
Yeah, I was looking at it at the numbers this year. The highest FIP and ERA of his career. He's actually 41st in pitching WAR, only one spot above Matt Boyd, which I thought was enlightening about how maybe not quite as bad Matt Boyd has been. But 41st, like that's not great, especially for your supposed ace. I'm just glad that there won't be any sort of temptation to pay below market value. And I feel like we're to the point where we can trust Al Avila to not do that, but it's nice to just go ahead and shut that down for the foreseeable future.
The only thing I'll say on that, and I think generally that's a good way to think about it. I did wonder, like, if any team, sometimes you'll, well, I don't know if you actually see it or if it's just all in my head, but, like, let's say, like, a team was to, like, go down the road with, on, like, a Jacob deGrom trade. Like, one of these guys who a team does not necessarily want to trade, and so some club's eyes get big, and they get down the road, and they go, okay, we're going to give these prospects up to get Jacob deGrom. And then those talks fall through because the Mets are like, no, never mind, we don't want to do it. If a team, if you could see like a GM, right, who's like, who thinks he's getting Jacob deGrom, and if you got healthy Michael Fulmer, he's put together a couple starts that make you think he's more like the player he's been than the one he's been this year, does that make you go, okay, well, I thought I was getting deGrom, and now I got to pivot real quick, and the only other guy I could think of who I know to be like kind of generally available is, you know, Fulmer and Archer, kind of the names who get out there every year. That was kind of the possibility that I was wondering on, like, if there's going to be a Fulmer deal, that's the only circumstance I could see that they got full value, is if a team, if another team thinks they're getting a high-end guy, doesn't get him, and needs to panic pivot.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, definitely.
Yeah,
I feel like as a, not that in any way is a, in the same, you know, ballpark, but as a fantasy baseball owner, like, you can get so far down the road and you're like, all right, I'm getting myself an ace. Once you, if that falls through, you almost are like, there's a disappointment. Like, you have to almost get a rebound ace from somebody else. And then you typically end up paying more than you want for somebody that you shouldn't have.
This literally happened to me yesterday. I was trying to trade for Steven Strasburg or Trevor Bauer. And in my league that I have, and we couldn't reach an agreement, so I ended up having to give up Juan Soto as part of a package, who was a guy I really didn't want to move, but I ended up with Severino, so I ended up fine with it, but I definitely did exactly what you're just saying.
So obviously the big deals so far have been the Manny Machado and the Francisco Mejia deals. Do you think that that's in any way going to affect what we can get for somebody like Iggy, you know, now knowing that one shortstop is off the market, or possibly make a guy like Shane Green more valuable because they've set the market relatively high?
Yeah, I mean, those things can go either way. It's like, on one hand, you know, any team can say, well, you're not going to get this for Iglesias because, you know, look what Manny Machado got. Like, you're several steps below that. Like, obviously, Iglesias was never going to bring in, like, any team that the Tigers asked for, like, a Francisco Mejia-level prospect was going to laugh him off the phone, right?
Of course.
But, I mean, so there's scales there. But to your point, yeah, I mean, I think there's an element of, like, there's a finite number of available shortstops. And as the teams who need them start to fill those needs, and maybe you're, like, the last shortstop needy team there, and you're like, well, if we don't get or maybe there's two left, and you're like, you know, let's say you're like the Brewers and the Phillies are down to it, and they're like, well, one of us is getting this guy, and I want to make sure that it's us, like, well, okay, let's go all in. I mean, I do think there's probably a chance of something like that happening, but it's all on a curve, you know, like, you're never going to get one of those elite prospects for a rental shortstop, like, whose bat is as light as Jose Iglesias's, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I feel like if we can get kind of the Kinsler level return, that would be probably more than I would expect to at this point.
Or international pool money, right? I mean, I think that's like a thing that I know people were killing the Mets for that trade, and I don't think they were wrong to kill them in that. But I don't think that it was also, I think that the fact that they got a significant amount of international money is at least something. Like, it probably wasn't enough to get the kind of prospect you want to get for Jerry's Familia. But I think, like, that strategy of, like, wanting to pull up some international money is not a bad way to go about this, especially if you do have guys who maybe the prospect that you're going to get for him doesn't feel like an impact guy. Well, maybe take $1 million international money.
Yeah, and it seems like we're more developing our strategy in the international market over the last two or so seasons, whereas obviously Dave would have never even considered something like that. Al has – I speak of them first name basis like we're buddies. Avila, like, I mean, clearly that's something that he's prioritized. He gave away two, you know, million-plus-dollar contracts this winter or this summer. Yeah, that seems to make a lot of sense. Could be good for both parties. Let's go ahead and at the Tigers and see if we can get that done.
Oh, I'm sure they're well aware, especially like you said, you know, based on based on the way that they've acted the last two international periods, it seems like that is an area that they are inclined to invest in, and which is smart. I mean, you look around at some of the stars in this league and the up-and-coming stars in this league, not all of them are draft guys anymore. You know, like, I mean, mm-hmm. you got some of the top prospects that are signing for, sometimes signing for not even that much money out of some of these countries. And I think it's definitely, from a Tigers perspective, important that they get their hat in the ring there.
The last guy I wanted to bring up, Nick Castellanos. Obviously, we as the Podcastianos don't want him going anywhere. That would be very bad for the hashtag brand.
You got a big stake in that.
Yeah. is there? I feel like we're, as fans, we're kind of in this weird limbo. Like half of us want him to. Half of us want them to sell him, just get what we can for him, and the other half like think we have to absolutely re-sign him. Where do you come down on that? And he's kind of a unique situation on the market this year because he does have a couple years of, you know, controllability left, and he's obviously one of the better right-handed bats in the league. Would there be a substantial market for him, and would you consider re-signing him long-term?
I think I would consider re-signing him long-term, to answer the second question first. A lot of it, obviously, you're talking about what the numbers are and what the term is. You certainly, I don't think you want to get tied down too long into a guy whose defense is already in question. Like, I don't know if you want to go too deep into the 30s on a big money contract. But when you talk about there being, like, what the market is, I think a lot of it will depend on what a team how much a team values defense, how much a team or how a team assesses where its defense is at right now, and how much a team trusts itself that, you know, if they're to go bring in a big bat. I think that is a bat that is appealing to 30 out of 30 teams, right? Like mm-hmm. you're getting an over 300 hitter with some pop, and just generally considered a good presence at the plate, and has been, I think, generally a good presence in the Tigers locker room. But if a team is like, you know, yeah, we really pride ourselves on defense, or we've got a lot of pitchers who we think who give up some fly balls, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're secure out there, maybe they're inclined to look elsewhere. I don't know. I mean, I think it's always going to be a factor in any conversation about him, like trade wise or just like, you know, on a podcast, like, how do you weigh that? And I don't know that there is a great answer because people value defense differently. I mean, the numbers say that there's like a pretty numerically standard way to value defense, right? But people do value it differently. So I don't know that there is kind of one easy answer there.
I guess truly, we're not the only podcast that has a stake in this. Him and Shane's podcast, who knows what could happen to that? That could be a real problem.
Right, maybe. Well, maybe they get traded together or something.
Oh, it's a package deal. Yeah, I mean, they could go over Skype. It just, I feel like it wouldn't have the same magic.
No, it wouldn't. Those guys are funny. I mean, I think they would give it a run, but yeah, it'd be tough.
Now, you recently returned from a road trip that many Tigers fans dream of. Eric and I have actually discussed, you know, making a trip like this, but we haven't because we're lazy. But it seems like so much fun. You hit the three nearby Detroit Tiger organizations, affiliates. What are some of your takeaways? What was the most enjoyable ballpark atmosphere for you?
I'm a Grand Rapids son, so West Michigan, it would be tough for me to slander or even go away from Grand Rapids there. I just think it's a really fun atmosphere. I mean, I don't know if I'm just inherently biased toward it because that's where I grew up, but I think they do stuff there that's just very fun. It's very, you feel very close to the players. They're sitting in the stands for during some parts of BP. There's just something that's simultaneously very minor league, but also, like, it's a legit nice stadium, you know? Mm-hmm. Toledo is a pretty cool experience because you do get the feeling like, okay, this is one notch down. Like, when I was there, Gary Sanchez was rehabbing for Scranton Wilkes-Barre, I think is the name of the AAA
team. Yeah, I think you're at the Rail Riders, yeah.
Yes, that's right. I was just trying to figure out what the city order was. Sometimes they're Wilkes-Barre Scranton, sometimes it's whatever. You know what I mean. I'd go West Michigan and then Toledo, a close runner-up. With all apologies to Erie, that was not maybe the the must-see stop on the tour, although that is where the must-see talent is, so it's a trade-off.
Yeah, that's very true. I do want to get into some of the bigger, more talented prospects, but everyone is into Death Rage. He's clearly the fan favorite at West Michigan. You obviously sat down with him a little bit. What can you tell us about him from a personality perspective? Is he a guy that we should love as much as we already do?
He's definitely a guy who enjoys having a laugh. I mean, you can sense the dairy farmer in him a little bit. A little slow to work into some of that stuff. Like we talked about, like him getting kicked in the stomach while trying to milk a cow during that article, which I thought was very fun. But yeah, I mean, he's a good guy. He definitely is not like he didn't come up. He doesn't seem like a guy whose name would be Death Rage. But at the same time, like you can see how he's got a little bit of intensity there to him. He's a muscly guy. I mean, there's personality there for sure.
Which tiger in recent memory would you most think would be appropriate to attribute the name Death Rage to? I'm trying to think here.
Oh man,
maybe Kinsler. Kinsler would make a pretty good Death Rage.
Yeah, so you have to have a balance, right? Like they got to be intense. They got to have like the red ass to them, right? And they also got to be probably a little imposing, I would think.
That's true.
Brock isn't especially imposing. Like he's a shorter guy. I wouldn't fight him, but I wouldn't fight a pro athlete. So
that's probably wise.
I think there's got to be some stature thing there, right?
Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, Kinsler doesn't bring that. Well,
I'm trying to think who does.
For any of you listeners that are just screaming at your phone, it's so and so.
Max Scherzer. It's
there
Max
you go.
Scherzer.
Yep. Good call. Yeah. There's. Yeah. That's spot on. So obviously you took part.
Can we swear on this podcast?
We keep it PG-13. So by all means.
All right. I won't swear. But the gif of him like mouthing like whatever he's saying into his glove, like or at somebody at the plate. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. I very much do.
I was just that came up last night, and that was the image I had of like him as Death Rage.
Yeah, little bit of intensity there. Now, obviously, you took on the Cotton Candy Hot Dog. We actually discussed that at length last week with Hookslide and Emily. It's really funny that it's coming up again this week. Give us the breakdown there.
Yeah. So what I wrote in the story, I believe, was that I don't regret any of the bites I took. I have no desire, and I will live perfectly happy never taking another. It's worth the experience. It's not as bad as you think it is. Like, I'll just say that. The guy who made it, Tom Ando, I think was very smart to put the nerds on it. Like, they're just crucial because
really? Okay.
Once you take the bite, it's like a texture thing, right? It's like the cotton candy and the hot dog, like, are just very, very weird. And, like, granted, there's a texture difference between the nerds and the hot dog, but, like, when you bite into the nerd, whatever, like, the flavors that unleash, like, they just make you forget about the hot dog part, which is the weirdest element, right? So you gotta have them. Like, you couldn't do the cotton candy hot dog with no nerds. Like, you wouldn't like it at all, I promise. But with the nerds, you're like, okay, I see how this all fits together. And that's what I'll say about it.
I feel like you just gave us the Guys Grocery Games judgment on it.
Okay, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Great mouthfeel and whatnot. Any other exciting foods that you had along your journey? I know West Michigan's known for food, shall we say.
Yeah, what did I have? I had a very bland meal. And on purpose while I was in Toledo because I was like after the cotton candy hot dog I was like all right I didn't eat this whole thing but I also need to reevaluate my life a little bit so I just had like turkey and green beans in the press box. West Michigan I had like a brat in the stands. I love like West Michigan has like these awesome concession or what do you call them condiment bars. Like they have things. They're like the most complete condiment bar. So I just loaded up a brat with stuff, and that was really good. Have you ever been to the West Michigan ballpark? Have you ever had like the chips that they have there?
I've been there many times. I have not. I'm the type that will eat before and after to not pay ballpark prices.
Fair.
So
absolutely fair.
I can't say that I've ever actually concession stand anything there.
Okay, I don't know if they have these at the concession stand because I was eating them in the press box, but they have these like chips that are like kind of like nicer chips, if you know what I mean. Like, right. I don't know if they're like called like pub chips or whatever.
Classy
but
chips.
They're just
yeah.
really, really good. Yeah, exactly. So I love those whenever I go to West Michigan. They're a must for me. I've never had the Fifth Third burger, but I was in high school when it came out, and I always wanted to do it. And now I might be past my metabolic prime to the point where I actually could get away with it.
Yeah, the window closes. It closes for all of us.
It does abruptly.
Yeah, we when Eric and I we did a bit of a podcast meetup there at one point this summer, and we actually saw a dude that was carrying that down. I'm assuming to hopefully his family, and that he wasn't just taking it all on. But yeah, it's a staggering feat of culinary achievement. That's for sure.
And human achievement for putting it down, you know.
Yeah. So let's move on to the actual prospects that presumably you were there to see. The system is kind of coming along nicely, you know? Like, you know, about a year ago, we kind of entered into this rebuild, and all of a sudden, you know, we're not at the bottom anymore. We're somewhere in the middle. Like Daz Cameron, like some of these guys are coming along really well. Was there a tangible sense of optimism through the affiliates that you could take away?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's so hard to tell, right? Because these guys they're in a grind. Like, yeah,
absolutely.
There might be like a general optimism, but on a day to day, it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of effort. It's so hot. I mean, it's hard to kind of feel that like swelling necessarily. But at the same time, yes, I think that they're all very aware of the opportunities that are ahead of them and how kind of few obstacles remain for them. Like, I think Daz in particular is a guy that seems like he can keep things in check mentally. We talked about kind of the Florida State League, and he was really excited to get away from those big fields there,
makes
right?
Sense.
Like, because he's I think the quote that he had was like, "There's some balls you hit there, and you're like, man, I just swore that was going out. Like, I know I got a little more pop than that," and I think so. Like, you know. You saw he had a little bit of a home run burst right when he got to Erie, right? Like, and that's got to feel good for a guy like that. You know, he's very he's very like kind of composed, and he when he has those thoughts, they kind of come through in a way that you're like, yeah, okay, this kid's one who's not going to have any problems getting his mind right to get the work, put the work in. I mean, he knows he's there to improve at certain things. He's got to adjust. He's thinking about mindset. It's not just the moment's not too big for him. Which is probably the best thing I can say about a prospect, right? Because that's an X factor when they're developing. I was also really impressed. Like, you talk about like, the rebuild kind of starting pretty recently. There's a couple of these guys who have been in the system. Like, Bo Burrows, like, he was a pick in 2015, I want to say he was their first-round pick. So he was there before the rebuild really started in earnest. Like, the draft at, like, early June, and that was kind of the year that there was the teardown with David Price and stuff. Yep. You want to assess for this? So he's the draft first round pick that year, and he was tearing it up. I mean, the start that I was at, I think he got hit kind of hard today, but the start I was at, he looked great, and his curveball looked good. He was able to go to his secondary stuff late in counts, his put away pitches, and the fastball was quite good. So when I left there, I was like, okay, Bo Burrows is something. Now I know that's one start, and you're not going to judge a prospect off one start. But to me, those are the kind of things that you've got these big name pitching prospects. You've got Mize, Perez, Manning, and all of those guys to some degree are the guys you want kind of at the top of a rotation. You can't count on all three being that because that's an odds game.
Right.
But if you can get one or two of them to hit, and then you can sprinkle guys like Burrows through who can maybe be a four, like a good four or something like that. At the major league level, that's where you really start to see like, okay, there's the makings of a full pitching staff now.
Yeah, and you adding guys like Funkhauser and hopefully eventually still Daniel Norris. Like there's just so much to be excited about. When realistically speaking, about this time last year, I mean, it was, you know, we had Manning, had Fieto and had Bo, but I don't know. There's just so much more optimism for me. And I think it's really interesting with Bo, like he's kind of flown under the radar amongst the other, you know, three or four. I think there's something to kind of not having that mantle of being, oh, top 100 guy. Like there's so much expected of you, especially more now than even in past years. Like everyone knows who the top 100 prospects are. Whereas I feel like you could go to a ballpark, you know, a while back and they were kind of just anonymous guys, just like any of the other ones. I think it's good for his development to kind of stay under the radar as long as he has.
Well, and at some point he's gonna put those secondary pitches together in enough consecutive starts that they're gonna throw him up to Toledo, and then I think the buzz around him will take it another step, because then he'll be right on the doorstep, right? Like,
yep.
And you know, Funkhauser just got promoted to Toledo, and he was there less time than Burrows. Like, I assume that I mean, I don't know. Is Funkhauser going to get up at the end of this year? I could see that.
Yeah.
Is Burrows? I mean, I don't know. Can he get to Toledo quick enough and get a couple starts there? I think it's the kind of thing where once they're in Toledo, you can really look down and just see, okay, they're one level below major league hitting, and they're doing this. Like, sure, it's time to give them a shot. I think Double A is kind of the proving ground to get to do that. But once you're out of there, it's like, all right, next step, majors, you know, the clock is ticking.
I think the question will just be, will we have any 40-man spots to spare to get those guys up? We have, you know, just such a packed, jam-packed 40-man with no dead wood at the bottom.
So I was thinking about that in the context of the deadline. Like, you could have, you know, if you trade five guys, you got five 40-man spots, right?
There you go. Fingers crossed.
That's right. You got to trade those guys. You got to find takers for everybody first. But I think that that's a solvable problem with the trade deadline. And I don't know if they have too many guys that they really want to, like, DFA or anything. But for the top prospects, like, there's a clear hierarchy there of priorities, right? Like, if they want Funkhauser up in September, they'll make it happen.
Yeah, sadly, I feel like my boy Drew is most likely going to be one of those casualties here. Probably not too awfully long.
Or he'll be a starter, you know?
There we go.
He'll be a starter for all of August.
To be fair, I'd rather see Blaine get a continued run as a starter than Drew. I feel like he's given me more to go on.
It depends on how long Fulmer's out, right? Like, okay, so like you got, if you trade Lirion, who's starting for you, and Fires, who's starting for you, and Fulmer's on the DL.
There's a lot of starts to go around, isn't there?
Right. You got Artie Lewicki, Ryan Carpenter, Blaine, but, you know, there's room.
Most definitely is. So I kind of wanted to take a step back from specifics and just look at your relationship within journalism. I'm assuming you grew up a Tigers fan, a Michigan fan. Is that correct?
Those are the teams I was watching. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're a sports fan, and those are the teams that are on your local TV station. So I was watching a whole lot of Tigers and a whole lot of Michigan. My parents met at Michigan, so that was not an option.
Chris, we spoke with Chris Iatt, I think last year at some point. He was talking about how you don't really root for the team. You more root for outcomes like that get you home fastest or give you the most to write about. Has it been a little bit more personal for you having grown up as a fan of the teams that you've covered, or is that kind of your outlook still?
Yeah, no, it hasn't been hard at all. I mean, they train it out of you pretty quickly, right? Like it's a criteria of the job is that you don't root for teams. I mean, you don't root for the team you cover. You don't root for really a team that the team you cover is playing, right? Like I couldn't cover the Rockies and be a Tigers fan either, you know?
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing that, you know, I think my first experience in journalism was at Michigan. So I was a, you know, very, what do you call it? Green reporter at the student paper, and the first thing you do is you do a shadow with an older reporter. So I went to a soccer game, and I wore a yellow shirt with a block M, and they were like, no, you can't do that. And fortunately, I had a flannel with me, so I just buttoned the flannel all the way up, and you couldn't tell any different. But like, yeah, so the first time you're like, oh yeah, like I'm gonna be a reporter and whatever. But you know, I think that was the last time I ever had any question about it. It was like the very first time I was going to job shadow. And from there on, you're like, okay, you're here to do a job. You're here to be analytical. You're here to see what's happening. You're here to interact with these guys. And like, frankly, like they interact with fans plenty. They don't need fans like in their locker room or whatever. Right. Like you're not a fan here. You're an employee. So just the fact that you come up with it in every step of the way, they're training you. It's being like, you know, like, okay. So if you're a freshman reporter there, I'm like, If you slip up and like you call some like Michigan we when you're covering, you know, wrestling or something, like all the older writers are gonna make fun of you because it's like, oh, you know, you're a homer, you're whatever, right? Like all the things that people would say on Twitter. So it gets drained out of you really quick. Like, you don't root for the team you cover. You don't root for the teams that you're covering or playing against. Like, you just don't do it. Like, you're here as like a separate entity. And from that point, it's just smooth. You can do it anywhere you go. I mean, it's the hardest part of it is when you have like, you have these like social interactions, right? And you've built up kind of these norms, right? So like, I grew up in a Michigan family. So my parents would see me and I'd be at, you know, the Orange Bowl. They'd be like, "Hope we win, go blue." And I'm like, I don't know what to text you back. Like, I can't just respond like that. I'm like, yeah, I hope you win too. I don't know. I can't say that. Like, I hope you have fun watching the game is kind of what it comes down to, right? So that's the part that's weird, is like how to interact with people who have an expectation of you kind of being, having the relationship with the team that they have.
Right.
And
yeah.
You don't. And you don't want to be like a dick because everyone thinks you're like, oh, I'm a big serious whatever. And that's not how you want to come off. But you also, you know, you got to be straight up about what your job is and what your relationship is with the team. That's where it comes into play for me, is how other people expect me to be about it versus how it actually is.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because you, like, when we look at people like you that, you know, are at every game, you almost think like, oh, that's the fan's dream. But it really is just a different world that you have to step into. And sometimes I wonder, and maybe you can speak to this, if that takes a little bit of the joy of sport out of it, like of, you know, just watching the sheer spectacle of it when you have to be so analytical to it. Like, has your enjoyment of sports decreased as you've had to be more professional towards it?
It depolarizes like both ways, right? So like, yeah, like I don't enjoy, because I'm not like rooting for a team. Like, if a team I'm covering, when Michigan was going undefeated my senior year, they were undefeated like 9 games into the year. And that was not like a riding high kind of thing. Like, it would have been when I was maybe in middle school or something. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I was covering Michigan and like, it was like the dark days, right? Like, Brady Hoke's there and there's the Shane Morris incident and all that stuff. Like, that's not painful for me. So it's like, it cuts both ways. It certainly changes the dynamic, but like, where people are like, I can't even watch this anymore. I'm like, well, why can't you watch it? It's still really fun, you know, football, really fun baseball. But I do remember what that feels like. But yeah, I mean, there is a trade-off. Like, I'm never going to be able to feel the way that I felt at age 11 again about watching a football game, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm glad that you're able to bring that perspective.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are you ready to move on to some Twitter questions? We've run a little longer than I was imagining, but maybe we'll see if we can sneak in a few here, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. The first one comes in. Let me load this up. From my buddy Matt Kozlerich. He asks, in an alternate universe where the Tigers did not trade JV to the Astros last year, what would the market look like for him this trade deadline, assuming the stats were same? Do you think the Tigers would have received a better package for JV now than last fall?
Interesting. Okay, so I do think it's a little bit of a leap to make the assumption that the stats would be the same, because as we've seen with guys who go to the Astros, like, they do get better, right? Like, this happened with Gerrit Cole. Charlie Morton was with Pittsburgh before this. Like,
yep.
He took a step up, right? Like,
oh yeah, a pretty big one.
Right. So it's not a given that he is doing this, right? Like, he's having a Cy Young level year, and he was showing signs of that in Detroit. I get it, but I don't know that you can kind of confidently make that assumption. I guess if you want to say like the risk level that existed last year with the number of years on his deal probably has been wiped out by his performance now, right? Because he's going to become a free agent in 2020. Like, you have no risk trading for Justin Verlander now. I think any team would do it, like, because $20 million is about what you should pay for a guy like that. Or is his base 28 still? Or I forget.
I 28 sounds closer to right. Yeah, I can't say I know off the top of my head.
Well, he's giving you a $30 million a year.
Right? Absolutely.
I don't think anyone would question that, you know? And I think you've got every reason to believe he can give you another one next year. So from that standpoint, maybe they don't have to eat the money, or maybe they still eat the money and they get a better package. I think it's reasonable to think that could have happened. But I also think that they got a pretty good package for him. And I think that, right. And at the time, you know, you go back with hindsight and it's like, should they have held him a year? I don't know. What good would he have done? Would he really be doing this with them? Like, there's a lot of variables there.
And this is strictly from a fan's perspective. I'd rather have given him the chance to win a World Series like he did than hold him back for another year. I mean, obviously, we're not going anywhere. You might as well get the package and let him go live his dreams and marry Kate Upton and all that stuff.
And don't you think, like, maybe that's part of the reason behind why he's, like, rediscovered this level? Like, don't you have to have that tension and those moments to break out that 99-mile-an-hour fastball he threw Kinsler yesterday?
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
can you do that in a tensionless game when you're, like, locked into third place in the AL Central?
I definitely wouldn't think so. That's a really good point. Next one, Brandon Kerr asks us, if Zimmerman would waive his trade clause to go to a contending team, what would you like to get? Who could be interested, and what do they have in return?
That's a three-parter. If you're the Tigers, you want middle infield prospects. You want the best prospect you can get, with a preference toward middle infield prospects, right? Like, you look down the road and you got Isaac Paredes, who is technically a shortstop but has my height and weight, and I know I couldn't play major league shortstop. Granted, there's a certain difference in athleticism there, but I'm just speaking about frame. Like, you know how that works, right?
Yeah,
like, you're more able to play second base when you're a little on the thicker side. I would think that they want as much middle infield, return as they could get. But you want the best prospect. So if a team's like, look, we're middle infield star, we can't afford to give you our high level second baseman or high level shortstop, but what if we give you a little bit better outfielder, a little bit better right-handed pitcher in return? The right-handed pitching in the Tiger system is good, but, like, I don't think you turn down another one, right? I mean, so you're looking for the best prospect.
Yeah.
As far as who would be interested in Jordan Zimmerman, I would think the answer is just all the teams that we know to be interested in starting pitching, which is most of them.
Pretty much all of them.
And then, you know, what do they have? I mean, you go system by system. That's kind of a tough question. I mean, the team that I think about with him is the Brewers, just because he's a Wisconsin guy.
Okay.
And I wonder if there's anything there. But, you know, there's all those variables, right? Like, are they going to pay another pitcher to not pitch for them? Like, are they going to eat more salary for him and then have, like, another guy who, if he's good and you're paying him to pitch for someone else, that's too bad. Someone's got to pitch these games. Or if he's, you know, if he's bad and he's not on your roster, well, okay, but you're still paying for it, right? Like, you're still paying him to not pitch games for you, and you have, you know, Artie Lewicki in there instead or something. So, who you know, sometimes he may be better, but Zimmerman's been, you know, one of their two best starting pitchers this year.
Yeah, I think it all depends on how much contract the other team would be willing to eat. If they're taking most of it, I mean, I would give him away for borderline free. I mean, obviously he's been better recently, but there was a while there where it was looking like a sunk cost. But if we are paying the majority of the contract still, then it really does become where you want to get something out of him. I mean, at least as far as
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you just don't want to have that much payroll dedicated to for other teams. Like, how much are they paying? Are they paying a Verlander still this year? I forget if that was a 1 year thing or not.
I'm not sure. But I believe they're still paying on Prince, aren't they? Or is that finally over?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I don't know for sure, but that's hilarious.
At Breslin Birds asks, when is Phil Koch joining the Athletic Detroit? I mean, you would be the one
say
to speak
that one
to
more
that.
Time?
When is Phil Koch joining The Athletic, Detroit?
Oh, he's actually already a shadow editor for us. So every Tiger story you read is the Phil Koch stamp of approval. I hope I can say that without getting sued.
I'd love to think that he's like literally pointing at like grammatical errors and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So. Phil Koch is the reason that I use so many M dashes. He's telling me, you know, that's take out that semicolon, that's an M dash. That's Phil Koch every time.
At Comeric Eric, I never heard of him. He says, "What's going on with the Tigers?" Oh, Eric.
Oh, that's a great question. They lost 9-1 to the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Chris Sale was good.
Chris Sale was very good. Yeah, that's something that we shouldn't just gloss over. He was he is great, but that was cool to watch, even though it was against our boys. Or my boys, sorry.
I was just marveling, like, and I've been kind of learning a little bit about this like kind of perceived velocity thing with guys as they come off the mound and those lanky guys and how it looks depending on where the release point is and stuff. And I gotta imagine Chris Sale is a guy who that pitch looks like it's coming so fast with how lanky he is and the angle he throws it at and how far he gets ahead with that arm. That's got to be so intimidating to stare down.
I mean, he's got to be the closest thing to Randy Johnson in that respect, at least in recent memory. He's just so long. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Adam Langworthy asks, is Victor Alcantara hashtag good?
We'll see. I mean, he's had a couple solid outings, right? I mean, he's... You know, I think everything's in the context of leverage, right? Like, it's one thing to pitch in a game where you're trailing. It's another thing to pitch in a game where you're protecting a lead, and it's the seventh inning, and it's, you know, 4-2 or whatever. So, and there's sample size stuff. So, you know, you'll see. But I don't think he's bad yet.
Yeah. We'll eventually figure that out, most likely. But for right now, let's live it up. Did you listen to the episode where I told the Victor Alcantara story from spring training?
No, I didn't hear it.
Okay, so we go down for I can work from home in the winter, so I have access to Florida for spring training. So we were down in Bradenton watching them play the Pirates, and so I love to post up behind the bullpen. I was a pitcher, so pitching is obviously what fascinates me the most. But he was in the bullpen. I want to say it was Kevin Comer, who was a non-roster invitee, was next to him. And Victor Alcantara spent the first two innings of the game. He had like a big, you know, bullpen like stone, you know, or, you know, it'd be like kind of from gravel. And he was like shivving the other rock that he had in his hand down to a point. He'll like... So he would, you know, the other bullpen pitchers would like clap when they would get an out or out of an inning, and he'd like look up and be like, oh, that's what happened, and then go right back to it. And then finally, like the third inning, he showed Kevin Comer like what he had been working on, and Kevin Comer gave him this look like, wait, what is just happening? Like, why do you think that I'm interested in this? He probably spent the better part of the first.
My answer.
Yeah.
I Victor Alcantara is the real deal, absolutely, and I would never want to offend him.
that's probably wise. He he has multiple weapons on him that he's you know fastened himself. It was just one of those deals. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, it can be very boring if you're watching spring training games all day every day. But I actually asked the groundskeeper if I could get the shiv from him, like, cause he just threw it to the ground when he like went to warm up. But, the groundskeeper did not give it to me. So I don't have that
did
keepsake.
You, did you call it the shiv? Cause that's probably why he wouldn't give it to you.
That probably is why.
Will you hand me that shiv? Like, I swear it's not mine. I just wanted the keepsake.
Yeah. Just in general, the answer to that question should always be no. Regardless right. of context. And the last one comes from Anthony Troy. He asked, at this point, extending Iglesias is a must. If we can't, don't, what are some realistic answers in the foreseeable future if they don't have, or if they stay in house?
Oh, wow.
That's a
tough one. So, well, I guess, boy. So, Dixon Machado is playing short in Toledo right now. I know how that's going to be received, but I still think that, you know, if you believe in him and if you're not in a hurry to win, that might still be the better alternative. Sergio Alcantara is a guy that I saw while I was in Erie. His arm is really, it's as advertised at short. And I think he can certainly play that position. He's still a pretty small guy. I wouldn't call that a major league body. I'm not a scout, so sometimes I misuse terms or whatever, but I think that's like a thing is like, you know, he's maybe not as filled out as you would want a guy to be at that level. And at the plate, you know, sure, he's hitting for some average and stuff, but there's just a difference in double-A pitching and major league pitching. And if you're going to be mad about Dixon Machado's bat, I don't know that you're going to be too much happier with Sergio Alcantara was like as of right now, you know,
yeah,
like he's as an underdeveloped physically guy. I don't know if that's the option either. You can go to Pete Cosma if you want. I mean,
he's still got Ronnie Rod, El Filino.
Yeah, and you can do that for some time too. So, but I think that we're clearly honing in on something, right? Which is that there is not a great answer in the system, and if Alcantara is not it for the long term, that kind of underscores why the middle infield, particularly shortstop, ought to be a place where the Tigers look really, really hard this trade deadline in their prospects, you know, even if it's the kind of thing where I love that San Diego did this when they packaged Brad Hand and Simber and they went and got one prospect that they really wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if the Tigers have guys, they don't have guys of the Hand Simber caliber to package like that, but is there a package they can do? You don't need to get a guy Mejia's level either. Like, is there a top 100 prospect they can hone in on who plays shortstop, who's maybe blocked in someone's system, and they happen to have two guys who fill a position of need for them this year, right? Like, can you do a two-player for one prospect deal with a guy you really like? If you can, that's got to be an attractive option.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be ideal. I love Nico, and I like him as a guy who can play multiple positions, but ideally Nico isn't in our starting lineup on opening day 2019. Though I'd rather see him in the lineup than Ronnie Rod, so you know, take what you can get, I guess.
Well, and he could be in the starting lineup, right? Depending on where he's at.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, Max, I very much appreciate you coming on to the show tonight. I took a lot more of your time than I was intending, but I hope you had fun. I certainly did.
Oh yeah, this was a blast. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can on Twitter. I am at JordanHall23. Eric is at Comeric Eric, and the show is at Podcastianos. Max is at M_Boltman. Be sure to follow him there and subscribe to The Athletic, and then you can read all of his stuff. Do you have any pieces coming out here in the near future?
Yeah, I've got a few. I always get worried when I say I've got a piece coming out, because then if something goes wrong, then I lied on your podcast and besmirch its good name.
All seven tomorrow of our listeners will be super disappointed.
Well, my plan is tomorrow, actually, I'm planning to have a projecting out the 2021 roster, which I think would be of interest to kind of some of the talking points we've just had. I mean, that's obviously, it's a fool's errand to do, but I'm a fool, so let's go at it.
Yeah, and if it doesn't turn out, it's just your buddies there anyway, and you can laugh over beers about it later.
That's right.
Let's see. And if you'd love, we'd love it if you take the time to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, etc. Do you have anything else to say to the listeners before we get out of here for the night?
No, just thanks for listening to me ramble.
And with that being said, we will catch you guys next week. And eat 'em up, Tigers. Eat 'em up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.